Hello, hello.
Hello.
This is Kieran and Ailey from the future, not from this episode.
It is.
Before we get into the episode, we want to share with you, our listeners.
Our treasured listeners.
Yes, our treasured listeners.
Yeah.
The trailer for another Scottish podcast.
Yeah.
Called Scottish Murders.
Very exciting. They focus on true crime cases that either happened in Scotland or involve people from Scotland. So if you like what we do, we think you'll really love Dom and Cole.
They're so lovely, and they release episodes every fortnight, and they're all great.
Yeah, I don't know, how are they so organised? They're so much more organised than we are.
So much more organised.
How?
You can find them wherever you listen to podcasts, so wherever you're listening to us right now, you'll be able to find Scottish Murders. But you can also find them on their website, scottishmurders.com, and they're pretty active on Twitter as @ScottishMurders.
Yep. So be sure to check them out, follow them on Twitter or social media, give them a listen, and tell them we sent you. Enjoy the trailer.
Enjoy.
I'm Dawn.
And I'm Cole.
And Scottish Murders is a true crime podcast dedicated to people from or living in Scotland.
Just like anywhere else in the world, these murders can be truly horrific and shocking, and we want to shine more light upon them.
Join us every 2 weeks on Scottish Murders, where we'll bring you cases both solved and unsolved, giving you an insight into the other side of Bonnie Scotland.
Find us wherever you stream your podcasts, as well as on social media.
Join us there. Bye.
Can you check if I have anything spooky in my teeth?
No, you're good.
Okay, that means we're ready to begin.
I'm so excited for this week.
Episode 4, I think, I'm pretty sure.
It's episode 4 of the Generally Spooky Podcast.
Generally Spooky Podcast.
Your name is Kieran.
I'm Kieran. You're Ailey, allegedly.
Mm-hmm.
You could be a ghost, I haven't checked.
Maybe.
Well, then you could still be Ailey the ghost, I suppose.
Wait, I would still have a name.
That's true. Here
Welcome.
We are. Welcome. So, how have you been?
I've been pretty good.
Pretty good? Pretty good. How are you feeling after last episode?
Last episode, we talked about the House of Dun.
Yes, we did.
It got spooky.
Things got spooky in here.
Yeah. It was a really interesting place. I would love to go.
Yeah, I quite agree. Go and check it out and see that sword statue.
Yeah, I'd love just to see it and have a walk around.
See if we can see the ghost knight.
Yeah. We got a lot of good feedback on episode 1.
We did.
It has actually been released.
Well, that's true. I think this is our first episode mm-hmm. since it's gone live.
Yeah, we've heard from quite a few people that you really liked that we talked about actually going to the place that, you know, the episode is about.
Which makes sense.
Yeah. So that could be something to think about for the future.
Definitely. Possibly something to think about for season 3.
More field trips.
Field trips. Spooky field trip. I'm excited.
Well, we're not talking about a place so much this week.
Ooh.
As we are an event.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Intrigue. I have no idea. Again, we're back to our regular programming.
Yeah.
I have no idea what we're talking about this week.
Well, roll the music.
Okay.
That's Game of Thrones.
We did that.
Well, yeah, we're talking about something a little different for us this week.
I wouldn't know.
It's less spooky and more murder mystery.
Well, I mean, I think that still falls under the remit of generally spooky.
Yeah, it's a historical murder mystery.
Ooh, who done it?
Well, we're going to talk about it. Be patient. I'm very excited. This is, like, my perfect episode. Because I follow a lot of true crime podcasts and shows, and I read a lot of true crime books in my free time, and I talk about history here once a week. So, you know, this is a good marriage of everything that I enjoy. And
And I'm here, which you also enjoy.
Yeah. We're back in the Highlands for this week's story.
Excellent, excellent. Bringing it home for the first time since Aldern.
Yeah, it's been a while. We haven't really talked about the Highlands much, really.
Not done. Aldern with Isabel Gowdy.
Yeah, that was in the Witchcraft series.
And the Loch Ness Monster.
Yes.
Very Highland.
Because obviously.
Obviously.
Well, this week we're in 1752.
Okay.
And the Scotland of this episode is quite different to the Scotland that we've spent quite a long time talking about in other episodes.
We're not doing the Reformation again, are we?
No. Finally. 1752 is post-Culloden.
Okay. I'm just wondering when Culloden was.
1746 was the year that Culloden happened. So we're in 1752. And this means that life for a lot of Highlanders has just gotten a lot harder. This is also a time when pipes are banned, tartan is banned. The Highlander way of life has basically been decimated. And if you were lucky enough to survive the slaughter of Culloden Moor and you were on the side of the Jacobites, then chances were that you had been rounded up as you tried to escape across the Highlands. And instead of being imprisoned, you were executed.
Very nice. Very nice.
There's a reason that the Duke of Cumberland was given the nickname the Butcher. But that's a story for a different episode.
That is. That's not what we're talking about today.
No, but it's relevant.
Okay, okay.
You kind of need to know a little bit. I'm going to get into just sort of the conflict that led to Culloden, because we need to understand why that happened to understand our story.
Well, you can't have something 6 years after Culloden in the Highlands and it be totally relevant to Culloden, can you?
So many of the clan leaders were killed or executed during or after Culloden, if they took part on the side of the Jacobites.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they managed to escape to somewhere like France, like a lot of them did, their lands that they left behind were considered forfeit, and they were handed out to those who had supported King George II instead of Bonnie Prince Charlie. Even if they survived, if they were living, their lands were given away. And there were two sides in this conflict, like I was saying. You had those who supported King George and the Hanoverian line, which came from William of Orange coming over and becoming king.
Yep.
Which we're not going to get too much into. And you had those who wanted that line, the Hanoverian line, replaced with the House of Stuart, who we've talked about.
Yep.
And this is another conflict that kind of stems from clashes between Protestants and Catholics, because King George was a Protestant and the Stuarts were Catholics, and there was a law in place that meant a Catholic couldn't be king. You know, you can't really get away from it. We're definitely going to do an episode on Culloden and the Jacobite uprisings, so we can talk about it in more detail, but for today you just need to know that to understand our murder mystery. So Clan Campbell was one of the clans that supported King George in all of the uprisings. And so they came out on top after Culloden. They had done pretty well. And I don't know if you know much about this, Kieran, but the Campbells generally have a bit of a bad rep in Scottish history.
I don't know a ton about it.
No?
Like a little bit.
Well, that's fine. You don't need to know too much for this. I have an episode lined up that will talk about that a bit more. But a lot of the time they're seen in quite an unflattering light. But the Campbells were given a lot of the land that had originally belonged to the Stuarts of Appin. And that's Stewart. So they aren't the royal house of Stuart, but Stuart, the surname, if that makes sense.
Yep.
The Stuarts of Appin were staunch supporters of Bonnie Prince Charlie. So after Culloden and everything, they had lost. They lost loads of men. I think they lost nearly 100 men. That one clan alone, that's a big deal. And their land was given to the Campbells.
Well, that's not going to be well received, the people still on that land, is it?
Well, no. You can imagine that the clans and the tenants and the lairds who had to leave their homes and find somewhere else to live were not happy about it.
Or just, you know, they're like, oh great, all my family and all my male family and friends have just been murdered in a battle, and now my land's getting given to the enemy, so I get to pay them rent.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, you know, you have that culture of people being forced from their homes and not really wanting to leave. So government agents and representatives were needed to organise the eviction of people and the collection of rents for the people who now have new landowners and things like that. They needed to have people in these places to maintain order, because that's what happens after there's been a major conflict and big change.
Well, yeah, I think it makes sense.
Yeah. The Stuarts of Appin had land in and around Ballachulish, which is on the west coast in the Highlands. It's quite near Fort William.
It's a fantastic name as well.
Ballachulish, I love it.
Ballachulish.
And this is some of the land that was given to the Campbells, the area around Ballachulish. There were several estates, and they were all given to the Campbells.
Mm.
And a man called Colin Campbell, who had the nickname the Red Fox, and I can't find anywhere that explains why he had that nickname. I don't know.
Ginger, maybe?
Maybe. I need to do some more reading or try and find someone who knows. But he had the nickname the Red Fox.
Mm.
He was put in charge of some of this land. He was actually put in charge of three whole estates. He was the factor. So he organised who lived there. He collected rent. So he had a lot of authority and a lot of prestige.
Let's hope it doesn't go to his head.
Well, can you imagine? Why on earth would that happen? That never happens in these stories. Campbell had actually survived Culloden by not being there.
It's a good way to do it.
The Duke of Cumberland, who I mentioned, when he and his men marched north, they were strategic in not leaving places undefended behind them. So as they left a place, they would leave some soldiers there to keep the town, so that the Jacobites couldn't come in behind them and take it and then sort of fence them in.
It's like risk.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, imagine risk is like this.
Yes. Yes.
So men were ordered to stay behind the army and defend the land that they had already taken. And this was one of the roles that Campbell had to fill. He was in Aberdeen while the Battle of Culloden happened.
Oh, okay.
So that's why he wasn't there, and that's how he survived. He was a married man. He had three daughters. Three legitimate ones, at least. He also had four illegitimate daughters with four different women.
Very good, very good.
Yeah. All that being said, he had a lot of authority, which is basically the important thing to take away. Like, for example, he could choose to evict tenants who lived on his land. He could, for example, choose to evict tenants who lived on his land. Stuart tenants. And he could, in theory, replace these Stuart tenants with Campbell tenants.
Well.
If he wanted to.
Yeah.
He could give his clansmen property and land and a livelihood while taking it away from the Stuarts.
Well, what would his incentive to do that be?
Well, this was something that he did and did happen. And you can see the problems with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to make a lot of people very angry.
Yeah.
So on the 14th of May, 1752... Campbell was in a place called Lettermore Wood, which is near Ballachulish, with four of his men. I think it's four of it. That could be up for debate. One of whom was his nephew, who was a lawyer called Mungo Campbell. And, allegedly, they were on their way to visit a tenant on the Ardshiel estate, and the plan was to evict them and replace them with Campbells.
Oh, that's nice, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Dodgy business. Very, very dodgy business.
Mm-hmm.
All alleged. There's no proof that this is what they were doing. This is just the generally held belief that this is what they were on their way to do. Now, as they're making their way through the trees, Mungo Campbell spots a lone figure standing on a hill looking down at them.
Hmm.
He was wearing a dark coat, he was short, and he was pointing a gun at them.
Mm-hmm.
One loud shot rang out through the woods, and then Colin Campbell collapsed. Someone had assassinated the Red Fox.
Oh, shit. Ho-ho! Things just got spicy.
Mm-hmm. Spicy indeed. Did you see it coming?
I didn't.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah, that's not what I was ready for.
What were you ready for?
I don't know, I assumed he was going to get there and then there'd be a battle.
A battle?
As then when they were like, oh, you have to leave. No, where are we going to go? I don't care, it's not my problem. I'm just in charge, so I get to tell you to leave. And they're like,
Campbell's body, was collected by a group of local men and brought back to a place called Ballahoolish House, which I believe was the Laird's house. That could be wrong, though. And his body was examined by two surgeons. So they were kind of performing a post-mortem of sorts. And they actually discovered that there were two bullet wounds in his back. Not one.
In his back.
The surgeon was able to work out that Campbell had been shot either with a musket rifle or with a pistol that had been loaded with two musket balls.
Oh, interesting.
Because both of these would leave Campbell with two bullet wounds, but could be delivered with only one shot.
That makes sense.
Right?
Yeah.
Apparently they'd really seriously damaged his liver, which is just an awful way to go.
It's pretty cool they could, like, have that effective an autopsy or post-mortem.
Yeah, they were able to tell quite a lot. I was surprised that they were able to put theories like that together so long ago. But yeah, he shot with two bullets, but with one shot.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And all I'm wondering is what someone from Ballahoolish called. Are they a Ballahooligan? What do you think?
No comment. So, Campbell's dead. His murder caused outrage. Not just in Scotland either. The bigwigs in London, down in the London government, British government, were furious that anyone would dare murder a government representative.
Oh, dang.
But it also made them clench, because this could mark the beginning of another Jacobite uprising, which they did not want. They'd come very close to having the monarchy completely turned upside down. They didn't want that again. They wanted to stamp out any kind of rebellion, which is why they'd been so hard on the Highlanders after Culloden. They wanted to be dominant over them, and they didn't want anything to happen. The king himself was told about this murder. King George.
Oh, shit.
The actual king. That's how worried they were.
Damn.
The Lord Justice Clerk, Charles Arskin, wrote a letter to the Secretary of State in London about the murder. And he wrote that the barbarous wretches, actors and accomplices of this assassination may be discovered and exemplarily punished.
Shit.
Orders were even sent north from London and from Edinburgh, ordering the authorities up here to get this under control and to, quote, make an example of the perpetrators by hanging them high.
And they're going to be standing there going, like, one person shot someone in a forest. That's all we have to go on.
Yeah, so, you know, it's super chill. It's just a super chill time for everybody.
Yeah, why don't we just go and get him? Oh, wait, we have no idea who he is. Or she is, or any way to find out.
All we have is that there was a dark figure in the forest.
I know.
Now this guy's dead.
It was nighttime and they were dark.
I don't know if it was nighttime. Oh, I don't think it was nighttime. I think it was in the middle of the day.
Easier to shoot in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
It's not much to go on to be able to find someone. To have everyone breathing out, catch this guy! How?
Right. Bear that in mind. Okay. They don't have a lot to go on. Okay, pin that for later. A reward was put up to catch Campbell's killer to the tune of £100, which was a big deal because that would be worth about 20 grand today.
That's pretty good going in.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot.
To people who might have just lost everything after Culloden, they might have lost the person who makes the money for the family, the breadwinner. They may have just lost their breadwinner in the battle. That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
And apparently they were so concerned about the killer escaping and getting away with his murder that a lot of the shipping that happened on the River Forth, which is a lot further south, was actually interrupted, and a lot of it was intercepted to make sure that nobody was escaping.
Jeez.
That's how seriously they were taking this.
Damn.
So here we are. We're in a culture and an atmosphere of turmoil in the Scottish Highlands. And we have a murder mystery. So who killed Colin Campbell?
Who done it?
Any thoughts? Any preliminary thoughts?
I'm thinking one of his illegitimate daughters. Ooh. Come in, get the job done.
That would be an interesting twist.
Mm-hmm. a loyal Jacobite.
Okay. Okay.
Who's coming to keep the charge on, so to speak. An angered, evicted tenant.
Okay.
With nothing, no one to go, nowhere to go, nothing to live for.
Someone bent on revenge.
Yeah. That's all I've got.
Well, I mean, they're all good guesses.
Or a ghost. That seems unlikely. Ghost.
Well, a lot of people thought that the Stuarts of Appin might be to blame.
Mm.
And they definitely have a motive as a group.
Yep, yep.
Well, the investigators of this case were actually really, really lucky. Because they had the guilty man in custody just a couple of days later.
I did wonder if this was going to happen.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
Aren't you just so happy? What could be wrong?
I mean...
Are you thrilled?
No, I'm not. I'm not thrilled.
Well, let me explain.
I'm assuming they just got a randomer, basically.
Just plucked someone off the street?
Pretty much. This guy did it. How'd you know? Ah, he's told us. Can you ask him now? He's been hung up already.
You say hung up like he's a piece of washing. Rumours were rife at the time in that area that a man called Alan Breck Stuart had murdered Colin Campbell. Now, I've seen in a lot of places Alan Breck is written in like Gaelic, but I don't want to butcher it.
Oh, yeah.
So Alan Breck is how I'm going to pronounce it. And like I said, lots of people in the local area were talking and they believed that it was him. Now, Breck actually means scarred or speckled in Gaelic. And he had that name because at some point in his life, he had had smallpox.
I wonder if it was going to be smallpox.
And if you didn't know, smallpox is terrible. You, just one thing that happened, you could be left with these huge big blisters that once they left and you dealt with them, they left these big scars behind them. And this is why Alan had that nickname. He had smallpox scars all over his face. So he was Alan Speckled.
That's just a shame.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. But he was the main suspect in Colin Campbell's murder.
I'm curious to hear why. Well, he did it, but based on what? I don't know. Seems a bit shifty, doesn't he?
It's all the scars.
Yeah, look at him covered in scars. Bent against revenge from what's been done to him. I saw a picture someone shared on Facebook of it was two youngish boys who had smallpox many, many years ago when it was a problem, and one had been vaccinated and one hadn't. But so they both still caught it, but the one who had vaccinated had like three of the little blister things. The other guy was just head to toe.
Yeah, it's awful. It's absolutely awful. I made the mistake of looking up pictures for this to understand what people meant by calling him that, and I wish I hadn't.
Yeah, well, I've seen one as well, for strangely.
Oh, it's just, it's a bad time.
Yeah, it's horrendous. It kind of reminds me of, like, it's almost like the grayscale in Game of Thrones kinda, level, yeah. Just being, like, covered.
It just, you have so many and so much of it, it just retextures your skin. Yeah. It's awful. It's awful. Yeah. Horrible. If there was ever an advert for getting vaccinated, yeah. It's smallpox.
So that was the, oh, well, if you can still catch it with the vaccine, why even bother with the vaccine? Like, oh, well, here's an example of smallpox with and without the vaccine.
And you know, smallpox doesn't exist anymore.
Exactly, because so, people got vaccine.
Anyway.
Go get your vaccine if you haven't already.
That was a good tangent, wasn't it?
Mm.
Oofed. Alan was the main suspect of killing Colin Campbell. And before this, he had been a courier for the Jacobite cause.
Hmm.
He sent messages back and forth between people. And he'd gotten very good at eluding being noticed and getting captured because he had to deliver these messages.
It's pretty good going.
Right?
Presumably he didn't blend into a crowd.
Well, you have to wonder because he was a courier and that's what he did.
Yeah. I'm assuming it's more like out in the wild. You can just like
maybe
dig and dup and weave.
Well, he had also supposedly made threats against Campbell in the weeks leading up to his murder.
Mm.
He didn't like him, and he didn't make any secret about it, which was a dangerous move at that time.
Yeah.
Rebellious.
I'm sure it was a widely held opinion, but to voice it out loud is something else entirely.
Very dangerous. He'd also apparently been asking around to find out what Campbell's schedule was in the run-up to and on the day of his murder.
It's not great.
Well, if that's true, that's pretty compelling.
Yeah.
Like, why else would Alan want to know Campbell's schedule? Especially as he was preparing to evict Stuart tenants.
Yeah. Oh, so what's his schedule for today? Why? Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I have a message to courier to him.
I need to give him a message. A warrant was issued almost immediately for Alan Breck's arrest. But if you're thinking that this is the man that was arrested for Colin Campbell's murder that I mentioned earlier...
I was thinking that.
You'd be wrong.
Oh, you led me on a wild goose
chase.
Dun,
dun, dun! I know, this is where it gets both juicy and terrible.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Alan Breck was never arrested.
Oh.
Even though a warrant was out for him. And he was viewed as the actual shooter of Colin Campbell.
Oh, was he that good at evading that he just didn't get caught?
He disappeared. He disappeared from Appin pretty much immediately after the murder. He was never found. From what I've been able to find, apparently he escaped to France. But there's other stories that have him fleeing to North America and then fighting against the British. In others, he escaped to Ireland and just started a completely new life as a farmer.
Damn.
But they never found him.
He just, like, ghosted.
So you mocking him that he sticks out in a crowd, you're wrong.
It's good work. I can do that.
He just disappeared.
Bailed. Packed up his notes.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I wonder if that's damning that he did it. Because even if he didn't do it, he would know that, like, oh, well, they're obviously going to think it was me. So I'm just gonna get out of Dodge.
Keep that thought.
Okay.
Since Alan couldn't be found, the government, the authorities, arrested a man called James Stewart, who was known locally as James of the Glen. He was Alan's foster father.
Oh.
Alan had grown up with James and his family, which was pretty common when the clan system was more in place. Mm-hmm. If you were sort of higher up in that clan system, then it was quite common to be raised by someone who wasn't actually your parents.
Mm.
James was an important figure in and around Appin. If I've got this right, his half-brother was a man called Charles Stewart of Ardshiel. And he was the one who called up the Stewart men to fight in the Jacobite uprising in 1745. He kind of acted like the clan chief, even though he wasn't, because there was no clan chief.
Interesting.
Of the Stuarts of Appin at this time. But he had to flee after Culloden because he was going to be executed.
Naturally.
And he actually hid out in a cave for a little while, which you can go visit. It's called Ardshiel's Cave.
Oh, wow.
And you can go see where he hid.
Very cool.
And he, this isn't strictly relevant, he hid there because it was quite close to the big house that he lived in with his wife, and they just had a daughter.
Mm.
So he didn't want to leave them. So he would hide there.
Wow.
And his wife would bring him food and look after him. But eventually the government forces basically took over the house and kept his family prisoner because they thought he was in the area and he was coming back. But he hid out. They never caught him.
Wow.
And he escaped to France.
Damn.
But it meant that all of his lands were forfeited.
Yeah. I wonder where these people go when they go to France, you know? You flee to France, you get your boat, you arrive in France, you go, oh, I don't speak French.
Well, I guess a lot of people did speak French.
Oh, do they?
Mm-hmm. And you might have had family there, but if you were a supporter of the Jacobite cause, you probably knew someone in France.
Well, that's true, eh? Because I know the French were pally with Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Bonnie Prince Charlie was for a while and stuff.
Old Alliance?
Yeah.
It's where Bonnie Prince Charlie was almost exclusively.
Yeah. Seem weird to just rock up and be like, so, is there like a consulate or something I can go to?
Well, that's what he did.
Yeah.
He managed to get away. This left James back in Appin.
Yeah, high and dry.
Well, not high and dry. You know, they would have killed his brother. So.
That's true.
You know, he had to leave.
Mm-hmm.
But he stayed in and around Appin. He was his half-brother. And James held a lot of sway with the Stuarts in his absence. And by all accounts, he was a decent man. He was described as a God-fearing Highlander. Mm. However, he and Campbell weren't on the best of terms either.
Mm. Naturally. How do you get the nickname The Glen, or Of The Glen?
By living in a glen.
I want to be Kieran of the Glen. Pretty cool.
Well, I think the farm he had been living on was called Glen Durer. I think it's in Glen Durer, and that's why he's James of the Glen.
That does make sense.
But that was actually one of the things he and Campbell fell out about.
Oh, yeah?
Because Campbell took his home away.
Oh.
He kicked him out, and he gave it to one of his cousins instead.
Naturally.
Mm-hmm. So Glen Durer went to the Campbells.
What an arsehole.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So that was one of the reasons they didn't get on. They worked together quite a lot. I think I read in a few places that James actually helped to collect Stuart rents, which was Campbell's job.
Mm-hmm.
But I imagine it would have been more pleasant if James was the one going around collecting it. I can imagine him stepping into that position to just sort of keep the peace.
Well, it'd be a nicer thing to do. If you kind of accept this is how things are, it'll make everyone's life easier.
That, and the fewer interactions that people were having with Campbell, the less likely he would be to get annoyed and want to kick you out.
Yeah.
So I can see the sense in that. Yep. But James had fought back against the evictions that were happening to the Stuarts. So, you know, that kind of set them at odds. And apparently at one point he said publicly that Campbell was no friend of his. Again, bold, but I don't blame him for saying it.
No.
On the day of the murder, James was several miles away from where it all happened. He wasn't in Lettermore Wood. He was nowhere around. I don't even think he was in Ballahoolish. I think he was further away. But James of the Glen was arrested.
Excellent.
Does that bother you?
It does.
Because it's about to get way worse.
I assumed as much. I didn't think they were going to go, oh, wait, you weren't anywhere near there, sweetie.
Oh, our mistake. Sorry.
Sorry. Your alibi checks out.
Nope. Initially, he was taken to Fort William, which was fairly common.
Mm-hmm.
Since the authorities believe that Alan Breck was the killer, they didn't believe James was actually the sole murderer, but they were going to charge him with helping Alan Breck.
Which I'm sure was execution. That he would be get his punishment.
What?
I'm sure he'd get punished with execution.
We'll get there. James was actually charged with, well, a charge that's called Airts and Pairts, which is a Scottish charge because aiding and abetting didn't exist in Scottish law.
Uh-huh.
So being charged with Airts and Pairts is being charged with helping a criminal.
Oh.
So that's what he was charged with. I didn't just make that up. That's actually a thing. But it means that he helped Alan commit the murder, but he didn't pull the trigger.
Yes.
That's what he's been charged with. And the punishment for that is death. Excellent.
Yeah.
James was adamant about his innocence from the very beginning. He had a solid alibi. Lots of people had seen him. They knew that he wasn't there. He could prove that he hadn't done the deed, mm-hmm. but that didn't matter.
Well, that doesn't mean he didn't help plan it.
Yeah.
But how do you prove that you didn't help do that?
Exactly. You can see that this is the issue.
Yeah.
He was taken from Fort William to Inverary on September 2nd, 1752, for his trial. So the murder happened in May. He's been moved to Inverary in September. Now, this was really strange because this, like I said earlier, this was a really big, important case.
Mm.
Lots of people had heard about it. Lots of people were upset.
Yeah.
It had reached the upper echelons of government. Usually cases like this were tried in Edinburgh.
Uh-huh.
Because it's more fitting. Inverary is further south from Ballahoolish and Appin, on the west coast still. Mm-hmm. Halfway kind of between Oban and Glasgow.
Okay.
Ish. I'm being kind of rough with my estimations. But, you know, that area.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a very important reason that James was taken to Inverary for his trial.
Oh.
Inverary Castle was the seat of Clan Campbell.
Oh. Oh, no. Oh. That's not where you want to be tried for murdering a Campbell.
Nope. Did your stomach drop?
Yeah.
Because it should have, because this is bad news.
Yeah. Can you visit Inverary Prison?
Yeah, Inverary Jail. Is it open to the public?
That's a thing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
I think I went there with my granny at one point. A long time ago.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, this is bad news for James. It's bad news for justice generally. It's very unfair because there's absolutely no way that he would ever have had a fair trial in the very heart of Campbell Land while accused of murdering a Campbell.
No way.
Mm. His trial started on the 21st of September, 1752, at 5 a.m.
Oh, it's another really weird time for trials. Mm-hmm. Was it the Burke and Hare trial? Yeah. That a really obscure time, like Christmas Day or something.
Super early in the morning. Well, this started at 5 and went on for 50 hours with no breaks.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my days.
50 with no breaks.
Why? So 7 a.m. on the third day. Oh.
How mad is that?
That's outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot longer than I thought it was going to last. I thought they were going to start at 5 a.m. and be done by like midday.
Well, there were 3 judges at this trial.
Well, they'd have to take shifts, wouldn't they?
3 judges. And the most senior of them was the Duke of Argyll, who was a man called Archibald Campbell, who was the chief of Clan Campbell.
Oh no.
There were also 15 jurors at this trial, and 11 of them were Campbells. I'm not joking. This is actually what happened. You know that shit's about to hit the fan. Because that's not okay.
That's not okay. I just... No, it's not okay.
James' defence really did their best for him. They were able to show that he had an alibi that placed him miles away from the murder and that there was no proof that he'd been involved in any conspiracy. They tried to make that point, mm-hmm. that there's no way you could prove it. There's no material evidence, there's nothing. But it didn't really matter.
Oh, they didn't really care.
No. They even made the point that Mungo Campbell, Colin Campbell's nephew, had seen the figure from sort of quite far away, but he hadn't been able to make out who it actually was.
Uh-huh.
So there was no way that he could say that was Alan Breck or that was James. Yeah. He couldn't tell. But it didn't matter one bit.
Well, no.
Because James was found guilty and he was sentenced to death.
Oh.
It really frustrates me. Just this story frustrates me.
Oh. Well, and again, because you've got... Isn't James Breck escaping?
Alan Breck
is escaping. Like, oh, that means he did it. I'm like, well, no, it means either he knew that you would come after him, or just he was a Jacobite supporter and he knew the way the winds were turning, so he just got out of Dodge.
Well, look what they've done to James.
Well, exactly.
Like, they know he didn't do it, and this is what happened. So even if Alan didn't do it, he was completely right to get the hell out of there, because this is what they do. I read a really great quote describing what had happened to James. And I can't remember which of my sources it came from. All the sources are always in the show notes, if you're interested. But it says, "Justice had been so callously discarded, and that the innocent James, as the leading steward around, was a dead man from the moment the bullets entered Glen Ure's back." Meaning mm-hmm. Campbell.
Uh-huh.
Which is right.
Absolutely true, yeah.
I feel like there's no way that nothing would have come down on James's head.
No.
Once Campbell had died.
Yeah, it just had to come back to bite him, didn't it?
Yeah. He was never going to get away with nothing.
If it was Alan who killed him, I wonder how he feels knowing that his uncle like went down for it.
His foster father.
For a foster father.
I don't know if he was his uncle, actually. I'm not sure what the exact relation was.
Oh, I've muddled with someone else's uncle. But his foster father.
Yeah, like he raised him.
Went down for the crime that he committed. That can't feel good.
Well, we weren't the only people to think that all of this was unfair. People in Appin were outraged and horrified at the outcome of the trial. It just...
There's a helicopter outside, but the way it flashed in and out, it looked very spooky.
Oh. Well, yeah, it didn't seem right. It seemed horrendously unfair.
Yeah.
And a lot of the wider public knew that.
Because it's horrendous.
Right? Just a loaded jury and the Campbell clan chief as your head judge.
I know. It's just outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
I don't imagine anyone down south cared, though. Any of the ones who are calling for blood or anything like that.
Well, I mean, it doesn't affect them, really.
Yeah, they're down sweet.
In favour with the king in London.
Yeah, taken care of. Yeah. Lovely.
Before too long, an escape plan was hatched to spring James out of his cell in Inverary, where he was being kept.
Well, that's good.
Now awaiting his execution.
I was hoping he'd also be able to flee to France.
Well, a man called Captain Graham. Nice. I can't find his full name. I can't find any more information. If I do ever find this information, I will bring it to you. I can't find it. He was going to break into Inverary jail to get James out.
Mm.
And then they'd flee the country.
Very nice.
Because they're on the coast, remember. Inverary is on the coast.
Oh, yeah.
So you could get away by boat if you were smart.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the plan. But the plan failed before it even really began. Because James was moved back to Fort William before Graham could save him.
Ooh. That's a shame.
Yes, and it was a lot harder to break into Fort William than it was to break into Inverary.
Yeah.
It's a lot more secure. Because the clue's in the name, it's Fort William. It's it was a big deal. It was an important stronghold for government forces for a really long time.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a lot harder to get in there to save James's life.
Big time. I think there's still an actual jail in Fort William.
Probably.
I think. That's where one of the jails of Scotland is.
Probably.
There you go.
Time passed. With James locked in his cell, his execution approaching, and he found out that he was scheduled to die on the 8th of November.
From the 21st of September?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, is today the 21st of September? Oh my god.
Oh my god. Yeah, it is, it is. Ooh, wow.
Spooky. It's not 5 a.m. though.
No. Oh my god. That's really spooky. I didn't, honestly didn't put that together.
Wait, because on the 21st, we know that's today.
Wow.
Ooh, that's weird.
That's really spooky.
That is spooky.
See, I've been working on the script for a couple of days, so I didn't...
No.
Wow.
That's weird. I've lost my point.
Well, he was scheduled to die on the 8th of November.
Yeah, from the 21st of September, so what was it, like 7 weeks later? Mm-hmm. Man.
And he was scheduled to be executed in Ballachulish.
Oh.
He was going to be executed in front of everyone he knew.
Oh, no. Oh, would it be nicer to die in your home?
For him, probably, yeah. But not for the people who knew him.
I suppose that's to make the example, isn't it?
Exactly, exactly. It's
to hang him high, as whoever it was said.
Yeah, it's another level of just cruelty, really.
Yeah.
But another escape plan was created.
Good, good.
Since his clansmen and his allies were really desperate to save him, because everyone knew that he hadn't done anything wrong. This time, they decided they were going to strike as James was taken from Fort William to Ballachulish.
I like
on
it.
On the day of his execution.
Very good, very good.
Which makes sense, because it would be a lot easier to get to him that way.
Uh-huh.
He's not inside Fort William, they don't have to sort of crack their way in there. They can just get him on the road.
Yep.
And they'd managed to gather 50 men who were willing to try and save James.
Oh.
50 men.
That's good going.
I don't think I have 50 men who would risk their lives for me.
Nope. Nope.
So... You know, a lot of people supported him and wanted him to be okay.
Just me and the dog. Come to your aid.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I trust the dog more than you.
Cruel.
He would get the job done.
Lick your guards to death.
That boy loves me more than life itself.
That is true.
Anyway, the plan got as far as... a proper map and a written plan making its way to James in his cell.
Oh, nice.
They managed to smuggle it to him, so he found out about the plot and knew what was going to happen.
Did they bake it into a cake?
I don't know how they got it to him. But this is where the escape plan ends. And this made me really sad. James looked over the plans and noticed that 50 men were involved, just like we did. That's a big number. But instead of being excited at the prospect of freedom, he felt really uneasy. So he sent a message to his would-be rescuers, forbidding them from rescuing him.
Oh.
Since it would not only put their lives at risk, but the lives of their wives, their children, their families, because if anyone found out they were involved, they would be hunted.
That did pop into my head, that then incriminates 50 people. And it seems that the only punishment for any crime is death.
Mm-hmm. So James turned down his own rescue for the sake of his family and his friends.
That is next level of bravery, isn't it?
He chose his own death instead of theirs.
Oh. my days.
Mm-hmm. It made me feel things when I was researching. I couldn't handle it. It was like a punch to the gut.
Jeez, oh. What a guy.
Mm-hmm. Right? That's what I thought. He wouldn't let them do it.
Yeah.
On the 7th of November, James was taken from Fort William with an escort of about 100 soldiers to Ballyhoolish. And they did not muck about. Government forces took control of the ferry that crossed Loch Linn. I think it's Lynn. L-I-N-N-H-E. Really sorry if I'm saying that wrong. They took control of the ferry on both sides of the loch.
Damn.
So that nobody could travel across. There were soldiers ahead of the group escorting James, like lining the road, preventing any kind of ambush or rescue.
It's for the best then that they didn't try and take him, because...
Well, exactly.
50 against 100 is not...
They thought about it. But actually, a group of Macleans and Camerons had come together separately to this escape plan to perform a last-minute rescue.
Oh, wow.
They were there. They were going to do it. But they saw how well-armed the soldiers were and how many soldiers there were. And they knew that they couldn't do it.
No.
That they were no match for the soldiers that were there. It would never have worked and it would have just been a slaughter.
Yeah.
So they couldn't go through with it. So that was James's last chance. And it just completely fell through.
Damn.
So even after that escape plan that he knew about, another one had been attempted, and they were there to do the thing, but couldn't.
Whoa.
I don't know if he knew they were there or not.
No.
If they were wise, then they were just unseen.
Yes. Maybe they just said afterwards that they were going to, but there were too many men.
We were totally gonna.
It was like we were there, we were organised, we had all our pitchforks, and because we're hunting Frankenstein apparently, and then we saw them, we're like, ah, that's kind of a lot though, isn't it? No, there's no point in laying down our lives. And then I was like, okay.
I think it says a lot for James's character.
Oh yeah, there's that many people willing.
Mm-hmm. Three separate occasions with three separate groups, pretty much. A gibbet and a scaffold were built on the edge of the loch, where the Ballyhoolish Bridge is now. And it was built purely for executing James.
Wow.
And even as he arrived at the gallows, he stayed strong and he stood by his innocence. He maintained that he had absolutely nothing to do with Colin Campbell's murder. And he had no part in any plot to carry it out. He admitted to nothing.
I fully believe it.
In fact, he was actually upset at the thought of future generations thinking that he had any part in this murder. That upset him more. That people would think he would do something like that.
Yeah.
Before he died, James recited the 35th Psalm.
Uh-huh.
Psalm 35. Which goes like this in the modern version. I've just picked out certain things because the whole psalm is quite long.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't want to take too long to recite the whole thing, but it's quite eerie. Like, he knew this by heart, but how apt it is for his situation. Now, if you are not a Bible reader, Psalm 35 is sort of about and related to the story of David being thrown into the lion's den.
Okay.
Don't know if you remember that.
A little bit.
That's all you kind of need to know.
So it's pretty self-explanatory there, isn't it?
But it goes like this. May those who seek my life be disgraced and put to shame. May those who plot my ruin be turned back in dismay. May they be like chaff before the wind. Since they hid their net for me without cause, and without cause dug a pit for me, may ruin overtake them by surprise. May the net they hid entangle them. May they fall into the pit, to their ruin. Ruthless witnesses come forward. They question me on things I know nothing about. They repay me evil for good and leave me like one bereaved. But when I stumbled, they gathered in glee. Assailants gathered against me without my knowledge. They slandered me without ceasing. Like the ungodly, they maliciously mocked. They gnashed their teeth at me. Do not let those gloat over me who are my enemy without cause. Do not let those who hate me without reason maliciously wink the eye. They do not speak peaceably, but devise false accusations against those who live quietly in the land. They sneer at me and say, aha, aha, with our own eyes we have seen it. Do not let them gloat over me. Do not let them think, aha, just what we wanted, or say, we have swallowed him up. May all who gloat over my distress be put to shame and confusion. May all who exalt themselves over me be clothed with shame and disgrace. May those who delight in my vindication shout for joy and gladness.
Wow. That is powerful.
It's eerie.
Yeah. Jeez, oh.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, that's a modern version of the psalm. It's not the exact words that James would have said, because it was an older style of Bible and different language. But yeah, the psalm is written about the story of David being thrown into the lion's den and then being saved because he's true to God.
Oofed.
He's thrown in by people who are conspiring against him and want favour with the king for like their own benefit.
Jeez, hell.
Mm-hmm. It's like it was written for him.
Yeah. Oh.
Now, apparently, I read in a few places, this psalm became known as the Psalm of James of the Glen.
I can see why.
Mm-hmm. But I asked Granny, and she hadn't heard that before.
Okay.
She was my reference. I asked her, and she had never heard it called that before.
Oh, that's a shame.
Maybe it's more localised.
Maybe it's a long time ago, too.
Yeah.
Like, it could have been called that for a long time, and then not be called that anymore.
Yeah. He recited the psalm, and then James was hanged on the 8th of November, 1752. The real killer of Colin Campbell hadn't appeared at the last minute, hadn't been caught, so James was killed. But unfortunately, this wasn't the end of James's punishment.
Oh, no.
Far from it. After he was executed, he was done the ultimate disservice because it was ordered that his body be left to hang there.
Ew.
While being guarded by 16 soldiers at all times for about the next 18 months.
What?
So that nobody could come and cut him down and bury him.
Jeez, oh. Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
It's horrendous.
So remember what you were saying about them choosing Ballyhoolish as the place to execute him as being a message? This is just loaded on top of that. He's been made an example of.
Cool.
And it was basically just to serve as a warning to everyone in the area that might have supported him or supported the Jacobite cause generally or had any thoughts about rebellion, that if you step out of line, this is what will happen to you.
It's very much a don't fuck with us.
Yeah.
Oh. God, can you imagine the smell being the guard? One of the guards. Oh. Oh.
Yeah. Now, what I can see from what I've read, his body was left hanging there for about 3 years total. It wasn't guarded all of that time. It was guarded for about 18 months. But it was hanging for about 3 years. And it's a bit grim. As his body decomposed, as is natural, it would fall apart because the things that hold your skeleton together aren't there anymore.
Well, that's why I wondered. How did it hang there for even 18 months?
Well, as that started to happen, they wrapped his body in chains and wire.
Oh, no.
To stop things falling to the ground.
Oh.
Because they didn't... You know, a big part of the reason was they didn't want people collecting his remains and burying them for him.
Well, God forbid they do that.
Mm-hmm. Oh. They were stopping that from happening. So that's how they managed it. Which is lovely.
I know. Oh, man. Fuck.
An innocent man.
Oh.
In 1754, 2 years after James's death, apparently the sight of his hanging body really upset a local man who was known as Daft McPhee. I have no more information on him. Apparently he was so upset watching this that he destroyed the gallows that he was hanging from. He threw it in the loch. Like, body and all. Everything. And I read somewhere that the wood from the gibbet and the scaffold and everything was used to build a bridge nearby, but I don't know if that's true.
Well, that'd be pretty weird, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. But I do know that the scaffold was rebuilt, because in 1755, the Lord Justice Clerk was informed that James's body had blown down in a storm in January of 1755. So he ordered for it to be quickly collected and then hung back up again before anyone found out. So that his body couldn't be collected by anybody.
Oh, why? This is why I don't let Campbells upon Campbells deal with the murder of a Campbell.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
So yeah, even when the thing got destroyed, they went to the effort of putting something back up so that the body could keep hanging.
Back up again.
And it was a public spectacle. You couldn't get away from it. It was really visible from everywhere around it.
Imagine living near that.
Yep.
Or trying to.
Someone who was pretty well liked. Yeah. As well. It would be hard.
It would be.
Especially if you have lots of family in the area.
Oh no.
Eventually, James was allowed to be taken down. They said it was okay, finally. And his bones were cleaned, and he was properly buried close to Durer, where I said his home was. He was finally laid to rest.
At last.
Mm-hmm. But much, much, much later, in 1911...
Oh.
Pardon me. A monument was erected in his honour.
Oh.
And you can still go see it, it's still there. And it actually says on the monument that James was executed for a crime he didn't commit.
Oh, wow.
So if you're in the area, you can go and see that.
Thank you.
Now, as you can imagine, people knew that this had been unfair. And some people went as far as to call it judicial murder, which is when the powers that be, authority, MISC, kill someone that they know is innocent using capital punishment to make some kind of a statement.
I mean, that is what this is.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, looking at his fate, it definitely seems that way.
Yeah.
Like, displaying him like that and making sure he was executed in Ballyhoolish.
Uh-huh.
It was all spectacle and it was all statement to anyone that supported the Jacobites
still. Absolutely.
Because that's what it was seen as.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a private dispute.
No.
It was all something bigger.
He was just caught up in.
Yeah. But you might be sitting there wondering, after all of that, who actually killed Colin Campbell?
Oh, well, I am. Do we have more information?
Well, I mentioned Alan Breck before.
You did.
He was the one that the government believed killed Colin Campbell.
Yep.
And he was actually tried in absentia.
Oh.
Which means you can be tried without actually being there.
That's good, isn't
and
it?
And he was sentenced to death.
Oh, well, that's lovely.
But they never caught him, like I said.
Who would defend him?
I don't know. I assume because of the way the law works, you would have to have defence.
Yeah. But their defence would be like, well, I don't know who this guy is, and I can't talk to him about what happened. Huh.
But yeah, he was tried and sentenced to death, but they never caught up with him.
Good. That's something at least.
Locally in Appin, like that area, a lot of people didn't think Alan was the murderer.
Okay.
They had other suspects. And other suspects have been brought forward more recently, like in the past 10, 20 years or so.
Naturally.
As people look into the case and how it's handled.
That's some cold case, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought I could talk you through some of the theories and some of the suspects.
Yes, please.
If you're interested.
So, who have we got? Who's I've just lost the word. When everyone's lined up and you have to, like, pick who the person is in the police station.
The lineup?
Is it just called a lineup?
Yes.
Oh, was it? Oh. Who's in the lineup, Ailey?
I think it's called a lineup.
I thought that was a special word. Because I had mugshot as well. Which is different.
I don't know. Don't want to look it up?
No, it's okay.
One theory that's been put forward is that Colin's murder was an inside job.
Oh.
Some people think that Mungo Campbell either killed Colin or organised the murder.
Interesting.
Now, he was Colin's nephew.
Mm-hmm.
He was there at the time. And this is a theory that was developed by a man called Professor Alan McInnes, who's a professor at Strathclyde.
Oh, cool.
Actually.
Where we went to uni.
Yeah. Oh, I've lost my spot. So, modern examinations of Campbell's post-mortem. Does that make sense?
That doesn't make sense. It's just wild.
People looking at it now.
Yeah.
They see or have seen from it that he wasn't shot from a distance at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like Mungo had claimed he was. He was shot at close range.
Mm.
That's what the wounds suggest.
Well, I wondered. I mean, it's one thing wondering, I know that you've said that, but when you said there was the two bullets, my first thought before you said it could have had two bullets and one gun, and that it was in his back, it was just two people standing behind him shot him. Not one person from far away, mm-hmm, with two bullets and a gun, or a musket.
Well, there were several people there and they all said it was one shot.
Okay.
But Mungo was the one who had said that he had seen the figure.
Yes.
But Colin Campbell was shot at close range and they looked at the angle of the bullet wound and it showed that the bullet didn't come from anywhere above him. It likely came from someone who was crouching down.
Interesting.
So that kind of picks into his nephew's story that it does. These things don't quite match up from what he said.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is a suggestion with these findings that the man that Mungo saw was just an observer and the shooter was actually hidden.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't see who shot him, but they saw the man who was with him. That's also a theory. But it was the Royal Society of Edinburgh that re-examined everything in 2013.
Wow.
And I just want to say I would have given anything to be sitting in that room. But the motive comes into play here because Mungo was the one who inherited Campbell's job and his responsibilities and his prestige and everything when he died.
That is good motive.
Well, in my mind, that's enough. Like, people have killed over less than that.
Absolutely.
It's definitely enough to suspect him.
Uh-huh.
So that's suspect number one.
Very nice. I was just thinking how you don't get a lot of Mungos anymore as a name. But like Mungo, is there a Saint Mungo? What did Saint Mungo do? Like, oh, that's Harry Potter, isn't it? Saint Mungo's is the wizard hospital.
Yeah, but there's like Saint Mungo's school and everything down in Glasgow.
There is, isn't there? Because mm-hmm. I couldn't remember if I got it muddled thinking it was just Harry Potter.
No, I think it's both.
Mungo. Hi, I'm Mungo of the Glen.
Yeah, St. Mungo's Cathedral in Glasgow.
Yeah.
St. Mungo Museum of Religious Life and Art.
It's also nice to Strathclyde.
I think St. Mungo's is Glasgow Cathedral.
Oh. Well, there you go.
Anyway. Another theory suggests that there was no one person responsible. That the murder of Colin Campbell was an organised Jacobite plot.
Mm-hmm.
One of the servants in the party that was travelling with Campbell that day is suspected of being a Jacobite.
Oh.
And was a Jacobite who was in on the plot and knew that it was going to happen.
Oh, Jacobite Bond.
Hmm?
So James Bond.
Oh.
As a spy.
Ian Nimmo, the chairman of the Robert Louis Stevenson Club.
Hmm.
We'll get to that. Had found out that John McKenzie, the servant, had actually left Colin Campbell's side just before he was shot.
Ooh.
To go back the way they had come to pick up a coat that had been dropped.
Oh.
So he was out of the line of fire exactly at the time that Campbell was shot.
Interesting. That's fairly compelling.
Mm-hmm.
Could also be coincidence.
Along with being a suspected Jacobite, I think you kind of need... Yeah. There's not enough there, but I think it's likely that it could have been a Jacobite plot.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of anti-Campbell feeling. There's a lot of anti-King George sentiment at the time. So if that's all left to brew and fester, along with people losing their homes and all that fun stuff, an assassination plot could unfold.
Yeah, you just want to terrorise, wouldn't you?
Well, you would just want revenge. You would want to even the score.
Because you wouldn't be able to do everything, but... You could be organised enough to cause terror.
Hmm.
Mm.
So, you know, could be. But the last theory I have is my favourite. My last possible suspect is a man called Donald Stewart.
Oh.
James of the Glen's son.
Ooh.
Now, he was raised with Alan Breck, who was James's foster son.
Foster, yep.
They were all raised together. And this theory, there's a few people who have suspected this and kind of researched this, but... In particular, it comes from one of the descendants of the Stuarts of Appin.
Oh, wow.
An 89-year-old woman called Anda Penman, who died a few years ago. In 2001, not long before she actually died, Anda came out with a pretty incredible addition to James of the Glen's story. And she was claiming that it was time to break the family's silence on what really happened.
Oh, shit. What's that, like 5 to 10 generations?
Isn't that insane?
That's insane.
So she said that Colin Campbell's murder had been arranged and plotted by 4 young, influential members of the Stuarts of Appin without the permission of James of the Glen.
Oh, man.
They had decided that they wanted revenge themselves. Before the murder, they held a shooting competition, which seemed innocent enough, but this was how they decided who was the best shot, who was the most accurate, who would be the most likely to deliver a fatal shot.
Oh.
Now, Donald was the best of the four of them, so he was the one that was chosen to kill Campbell. Now, on the day of the murder, he was never even suspected. He was never even asked to provide an alibi, because he was one of the men asked to recover Campbell's body to bring it back to Ballyhoolish House.
Oh.
Remember from earlier? Yeah. Plot twist.
Oh. Jeez, oh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, a woman called Lee Holcomb has also done a lot of research into this story for her book. I think she's also passed away. But she discovered, she looked at it all and figured out that it was totally possible for Donald to be in Lettermore Wood to kill Campbell and then have time to make it out again and meet with the group who hear about the murder and then return to the body. She said that about 2 hours passed between Campbell being shot and the men arriving at his body to collect him.
Okay.
So Donald, in theory, had plenty of time and space and cover to get rid of the gun and any identifying clothes he had on, like a dark coat, maybe.
And just leg it back to the group.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm hearing what happened. No, guys. What's up? What's going on? Where have you been? Nowhere.
But there was plenty of time for him to be in place to supposedly hear about the murder along with everyone else and to then join the group to go and fetch Campbell.
Yeah. That's juicy.
Mm-hmm. Now, these next bits of evidence kind of broke my heart. But apparently when James was arrested for the murder, Donald was inconsolable.
Yeah.
And he actually had to be held down when it came out that his father had been convicted of the crime because he wanted to go and confess. He wanted to go and own up to it, and the people who were there wouldn't let him.
Oh, no.
To try and keep him safe. But he wanted to go and save his dad.
Oh. I can't handle the thought of him looking at his dad hung up there for 3 years.
Over something he did without telling him.
Oh my days.
Right?
Oh.
The fact that he had to be held down
to
stop from just leaving. After his dad's execution, and once it was allowed, Donald was the one who was chosen to be responsible for washing his bones and for burying his father.
Oh.
Something that makes a lot of sense when you consider that James died for the crime that Donald did.
Yep, that does make sense. But it would also make sense that his son would do it.
It would, it would. I'm not saying that that's the only reason.
Oh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Stuarts had never given up who really killed Colin Campbell. It was widely speculated that they knew who had done it because they knew that James didn't do it.
Yeah.
But they never gave up who was truly to blame. And Anda Penman claims that the true identity of the killer had been passed down through select members of her family for years.
Jesus, 300 years.
Mm-hmm. And although she claims she's finally come forward with the truth, saying it was Donald, no one else in her family has come forward to verify the story.
Huh.
No one else has said anything.
Weird.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that insane?
That is insane.
Like a family secret passed down that this person was actually responsible for this murder.
It's Glam's Castle all over again, isn't it?
Right? That's why this was my favourite theory, hands down.
Yeah, that's got to be the favourite. I don't know if it's the most believable, but it's definitely my favourite.
Oh, I think it could be.
It seems very... Like, my granny totally would have just, like, shitted about and said that. Oh, yeah, guys, guess what? Family secret here, then told everyone.
I thought you were going to say that your granny would do you in. No. She'd hand you over.
What was that wee bastard?
I don't think so.
No.
But just, that completely enthralled me.
Yeah.
When I read that.
It's a very cool story.
Mm-hmm. I have a family secret like that.
I really want it to be true.
Well, see, I think part of me is excited by that because my maiden name is Stuart.
Mm-hmm.
I was Stuart before I was McCrae. So the fact that there's this big family secret and...
You have to grill your granny. Do you have any family secrets? Or I suppose it would have been your grandpa.
I think she would have told us all by now. Albeit, I think she would have spilled the beans a long time ago. For a wee Sherry.
Yeah, that's true. She wouldn't have been a secret keeper.
In 2008, a campaign was started to try and secure a pardon for James Stewart. And the Scottish Criminal Cases Review Commission was asked to reconsider the case because it was felt that he had been denied justice. This wasn't right. It wasn't fair with all of the Campbells that were present in Campbell land.
Yeah. You
know, it's not right. But it was denied on the basis that looking into the case again would do nothing for justice because it's so old.
Well.
So as of 2010, the application is still with the Scottish Government. Just waiting.
Jeez, oh.
I think he should be pardoned. I don't think it's right.
Yeah. It's a really weird system, because that's a few times pardons have come up. Such a bizarre thing.
I think it's very difficult to do.
Yeah. I'd be curious who has been pardoned over the years.
Well, we talked about the act coming in that pardoned anyone who was convicted of being gay.
Well, that's true, yeah. All pardons, all the...
Automatically pardons gay men.
Yeah. Weird.
Yeah, but yeah, it hasn't gone anywhere. He hasn't received a pardon. Now, one of the most interesting things about this story is that it actually inspired Robert Louis Stevenson to write his novel Kidnapped.
Oh.
In it, the main character meets a rogue Highlander called Alan Breck, who's trying to escape a murder charge.
Oh, wow. That makes sense why the chairman of the Robert Louis Stevenson Society was involved.
Exactly.
He wasn't just a hobbyist and that's his title.
I told you we'd get to it.
All circles round.
Stevenson was on holiday in Strathpeffer with his parents. Uh-huh. He's a Scottish writer, if you didn't know. And his dad found him a copy of The Trial of James Stewart in a bookshop in Inverness. And Stevenson at the time had been planning on writing this comprehensive history of the Highlands. That's what he wanted to do. So when his dad saw this book, he got it for him. And Stevenson read about how awfully James had been treated in this mad story, this murder, this mystery, and it inspired him to write his book.
Well.
So there you go.
Well, there you go. Was it Robert Louis Stevenson who... No, I don't think it was. Who, like, romanticised the Highlands and things.
That's Sir Walter Scott.
Ah, yeah.
Robert Louis Stevenson wrote Jekyll and Hyde.
Oh.
On Treasure Island, I think.
Yes.
Slightly different.
Yeah. So I wonder if he ever wrote his history of the Highlands. It's a big old history.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I should look into it.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to know more about the Appin murder, as it's known, I highly, highly recommend a book by James Hunter called The Appin Murder, The Killing That Shook a Nation.
Oh.
A lot of good stuff came from that. I would highly recommend it. It has an awful lot more detail than I have. He's the director of the Centre of History at the University of the Highlands and Islands.
Very cool.
Yeah. So he knows what he's talking about. You can trust him.
You're just going to say, for more information, just go back to the start of this episode and listen to it again.
No, because James Hunter is far better than I am. So if you want to know more and lots of detail, I would recommend reading that. But unfortunately, I think James was just a victim in the struggle for power.
Yeah.
That had taken over Britain in the 1700s.
As so many people often are.
Mm-hmm. In a letter from the Secretary of State in London to the Lord Advocate after James was convicted and everything, he wrote, "Nothing could be more material to the future well-being and governing of distant parts of Scotland. The exemplary punishment of this notorious criminal would convince those previously misled that hitherto the only true and solid happiness was founded on His Majesty's authority and protection."
Oh, God. Bring on Scottish independence.
So yeah, it was just, he was an example.
Outrageous.
Yeah. He was just treated as a means to an end.
Yeah.
And he hadn't done anything wrong. And I think that's what makes this story linger. I think it's why so many people talk about it. Just the injustice of it, just roots into your soul and you feel it.
Yeah.
Because you know what's not right and you know what happened anyway. But that is the story of the Appin murder.
Damn.
But now, knowing it, the Appin murder could apply to Colin Campbell, or it could apply to James Stewart.
Oh.
In my opinion.
Yeah, big time. They were definitely both murdered. It's interesting with the pardons, saying that it has no bearing now if you were to be pardoned, but then that can equally go, so why not pardon him?
Well, it just says it doesn't benefit the cause of justice.
Yeah, sorry.
Was what they said.
That's better. Better wording. Which, it wouldn't compare to pardoning gay men who are convicted. But, just because it doesn't benefit, why can't you just do it anyway?
I know, I'm not sure. I don't know whether a pardon has to then set a new precedent for moving forward.
Yeah.
Whether, because that would be a benefit to the cause of justice, that you've pardoned this person, so you can't then convict other people.
Yes, such as gay men.
Yeah, you know.
Because that does make sense. Maybe it would devalue other pardons if you start pardoning. Not pardoning everything, but pardoning stuff like that.
But I think this has come up a lot when it's an issue on the side of government that pardons are very hard to come by. Because this was government, British government forces.
That's true, eh?
That did this. So then for them to admit that they were wrong, I wonder if that's the problem.
That would make a lot more sense.
Maybe.
Maybe. Who knows?
I'm not a lawyer. I don't know.
I don't know, mate.
What did you think of the story?
Excellent story. Excellent whodunit. I'm most curious about Alan Breck. Where's he off to?
I know. There's...
What's he doing? Oh, he's dead now, obviously.
No, well, I don't think he's still alive. Yeah. He was never seen, never found. He escaped with his skin.
I know. Lucky guy.
Mm-hmm, very lucky.
Very talented guy.
He escaped, and then he was immortalised in a novel. Forever. I don't know, it'd be a hard life.
Yeah, it can't have been easy.
Leaving all that behind. And knowing what happened in your absence.
Yeah.
That's not easy.
I think it's what we talked about, like in the Flannan Isle episode 2 of season 1, that you want the people, you can romanticise escaping, so that the Lighthouse Keepers escaped. They went to America and it was all fine. So you can imagine Alan Breck went to France and lived amongst the Jacobite escapees and supporters and stuff.
Yeah.
And just had a grand old life entertaining the aristocracy of France.
It's always nicer that way, if you can imagine that.
Yeah. Than him just living as a homeless person in a cave.
That's what his uncle did for a while.
Yeah. Oh, that's who. That's where I was getting confused with the uncles. It was his uncle.
I think it was his foster uncle, anyway.
Yes. Yeah. Damn.
Yeah, our first proper murder mystery.
I know. A whole new genre, old crime. true old. Crime.
Yeah, I don't think
true crime.
Current true crime, so to speak, is gonna come under our remit, really.
No. And if you said true crime, they'd listen to this, you'd be like, what?
It is still true crime, it's just old.
It is a crime that was true.
Mm-hmm.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I enjoyed the journey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big time.
Excellent. I just wanna know.
I know.
I wanna know who did it.
It's just so sad as well, as so many of these episodes always are.
It is. It's sad. Because it's not fair.
No. Just the injustice. And the brutality.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening to this.
I enjoyed listening to this.
If you made it to the end.
I hope you did too. And if you are enjoying these episodes and want to support the Generally Spooky podcast, then you can donate to us at generallyspooky.com/donate.
Yep, it's a little PayPal button.
Yeah.
So it's super easy.
And you can help us keep making these.
Yeah.
And
next or you could just buy us a coffee.
Yeah. We would really appreciate it.
Yeah.
And come find us on Instagram at Generally Spooky.
Yes, we're on Instagram. And we're trying TikTok.
Oh, yeah.
We are getting down with the kids. And we are not trendy or cool, but we're trying anyway.
And we're on TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
At Generally Spooky again.
Generally Spooky podcast on TikTok. Mm. Yeah, nice. Come join us. Come laugh at our attempts to
be hip and young and cool.
Yeah. Making history fun. And we'll speak to you guys next week.
We will. Bye.
Bye.